Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Psachim Daf Lamed Vav. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. We begin our shiur 6 lines from the top of Daf Lamed Vav. You'll notice in the middle of the line the abbreviated Tanu Rabbanon and a Tanaic source that follows in a frame. Before we begin the actual Gemara, we glance at the side where we have our topic heading, and we've written Machlokes Tanoim Ma Dorshim Mi Lechem Oni. The Pasuk says that one shall eat on Pesach Lechem Oni. What does that expression mean? Rabbi Yosi Aglili will take that expression and learn that it comes to exclude using or eating from miser sheni grains that you baked into matzahs, that you cannot use for your matzah chiyuv. Miser sheni is a tithe that one removes, separates from his produce, 1/10 of his produce during the first, second, fourth, and fifth years of the Shemitah cycle, of the agricultural sabbatical cycle. And those fruits, or in this case the grains, he is expected to consume while in Yerushalayim. That's the din of Maaser Sheni. We will be telling you, according to Rabbi Yosi Aglili, based on the expression Lechem Oni, that one cannot fulfill his matzah requirement through Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim. Rabbi Kiva will tell you Lechem Oni is to the Lafuke Iso Sheniloisha B'yayin V'shemen Udvash. This will exclude using matzahs that were kneaded or prepared with, instead of water, with wine, oil, or honey. Now the Gemara. Tanu Rabbanan, Yochol Yotze Odom Yedei Choyvosu B'Maiser Sheni B'Yushalayim. Could one fulfill his matzah requirement by consuming Maaser Sheni in Yerushalayim? In other words, matzahs that were prepared with grains that he tithed as his Maaser Sheni and subsequently produced flour from that. Tamud Lomar Lechem Oini. The Pasuk, when commanding us to eat matzahs, it uses the expression lechem oini, and we learn from that expression mi shenechal baninus, that which even an onain would be able to eat. An onain is someone who, lo aleinu, lost a close relative, and before the burial, he is in a state of aninus. So it's we'll call it an intensive state of mourning. It's actually before the Avelus period. It's during this time that the relative is preoccupied with burying his relative. So someone who is in a state of aninus is not allowed to eat Maaser Sheni. Lechem Oini dictates that the food that you're using for matzahs must be something that an onain would be allowed to eat. Maaser Sheni is something an onain is not allowed to eat. As the Brisa says, Yotza Zeh, to the exclusion of Maaser Sheni, She'eno Nechal Baninus, Elo Besimchot. It cannot be eaten in a state of aninus, only if the person is in a state of happiness, which of course is not the case when one is an onain. The Pasuk in Maaser Sheni says, Lo achalti ba'oini mimeno. A person makes a declaration that I did not consume my Maaser Sheni when I was an onain. So matzahs made of Maaser Sheni, being that they would not be fit for an onain, they will not conform to the requirements of matzah that the Torah requires us to eat on Pesach. Rabbi Akiva Omer, Matzos, Matzos, Riba. The term Matzos appears numerous times in the Torah, and as a result of that, it's coming to include even Maaser Sheni for being acceptable as matzahs for Pesach. Im kein matam loma lechem oni. So then what do I derive from the expression lechem oni? Answer, prat le'isa sheni loisha b'yayin v'shemen udvash, to the exclusion of dough, matzah dough, prepared using as its liquid medium wine, oil, or honey. My time under Rabbi Akiva. So the Gemara asks, why is it that Rabbi Akiva rejects the Lechem Oni drasha of Rabbi Yossi Aglili? The exclusion of Maaser Sheni based on the fact that an Onain is not allowed to eat it. So Rabbi Akiva will tell you, Greek Siv Lechem Oini, does it spell the word Oini with a Vav in the Torah? No. Oni Ksiv. It's true that we read it as Oni with a Cholam vowelization. However, it appears in the Torah as Oni. Oni meaning impoverished. And as such, Rabbi Akiva does not see the word Onain in the Torah reference to matzahs as Lechem Oni. We should point out, just parenthetically, that the word Onain is spelled with an Aleph, and the word in the context of matzahs, Lechem Oni, appears with an Ayin. That doesn't appear to be a problem as far as the drush is concerned. In other words, the Aleph and Ayin are interchangeable with regard to this particular drusha, but the lack of the Vav, as far as Rabbi Akiva is concerned, makes a difference. The Gemara continues, Rabbi Yosef Glili, who does darshan lechem oni and sees in that the word onain, he says, mi karinon oni, do we read it as oni, as a poor man? Oini karinon bay, we read it with a vav, or with the cholam vowelization, and therefore, because of the way we read it, Rabbi Yosef Glili emphasizes the onain aspect to the exclusion of Maaser Sheni. Rabbi Akiva, hi de karinon bay oini, Rabbi Akiva acknowledges that we do read it with a vav, oini, Kiddushmuel, that is for a different drasha. That's in accordance with Shmuel's teaching. Domar Shmuel, lechem oini equals lechem she'oinin olav dvarim harbe. Lechem oni, as a reference to matzah, is associated with oini in the sense of oinin. Oinin has to do with response or recitation of things. Namely, that when you're eating the matzahs, you are also involved with the Hallel recitation and the reading of the Haggadah. So, Onain, or Oni, Lechem Oni, as far as Rabbi Akiva is concerned, the Vav reading of that word has value, but as far as Shmuel's teaching, but not like Rabbi Yossi Haglili, who associated with Aninus. Question. Now, this question is a long question. It takes in a Tanaic source as well. And the Gemara asks, V'savar Rabbi Akiva Isa Shemiloisha B'yayin V'shemen Udvash Loi? Does Rabbi Akiva really hold that Lechem Oni comes to the exclusion of dough prepared with wine, oil, or honey? V'ha Tanya. Now we have a Tanaic source, and in this source we will see Rabbi Akiva. He appears. You can see he's dashed underline. And we have a story involving Rabbi Akiva visiting Rabbi Lezer and Rabbi Yoshua, and in the source we dashed on the line as well the expression "Velashtem Isa B'Yayin Shemen Vash." I prepared for them matzis using Yayin Shemen or Dvash as the liquid medium for kneading them, and they didn't object. So that will show us that matzis prepared with any one of those liquids is seemingly acceptable. So how is it that Rabbi Akiva excluded them just a few lines before? So the Gemara now presents the source. How can you say that Rabbi Akiva rejects matzahs prepared with yain shemen or dvash? V'hotanya. We have a source. Ein loshen isa b'pesach b'yain shemen u'dvash. The Tanakhama says one should not prepare, should losh is to knead isa dough with these liquids. Ve'im losh, and if a person did do so, Rabbi Gamliel Omer tisoref miyad, you should burn it immediately. The idea of burning it immediately would mean on Chol HaMoed. V'chachomim omrim ye'ochel. Rabbi Chomim say you can eat that. According to Rabbi Gamliel, who said they must be burnt immediately, he holds that it's impossible to guard them from chimutz, from fermentation. The Chachamim disagree and say it is possible to keep them from fermenting. If we look in the Rashi, on the upper part of the narrow lines, Ein loshen es o'isa, shel matzos, the dough used for making matzos, b'yayin shemen u'dvash, b'nei shekrovo m'maheres l'achmitz. They ferment rapidly. V'ein odem yochol l'shoimran, a person can't keep them from that, keep them from fermenting. And therefore, if one did knead his dough using those liquids, the dough should be burnt immediately. We continue with the source. V'omar Rabbi Akiva. Shavati. Shavati is an expression meaning I spent the holiday, like from the word Shabbos. Was I spent the holiday, Shabbatzi Hoiso Eitzo Rabbi Eliezer Rabbi Yoshua. In other words, as we said, I spent my the holiday of Pesach by these great luminaries, Rabbi Eliezer and Rabbi Yeshua. Velashti Lohem Iso B'yayin V'shem U'dvash. So very interesting to note. Parenthetically, we're dealing with the greatest of our people, and one of them, of course, is the great Rabbi Akiva, and it says here in no uncertain terms, he says that, and I baked for them, and he was preparing dough for them. Just try to imagine great figures like this involved with work in the kitchen. And he says he was kneading dough and using yayin shemen and vash velo omru li davar, and they didn't say anything. Apparently, it's okay to prepare dough using Yayin Shemen Udvash on Pesach. Now, as the source continues, we have a phrase that will be pointed out that this is in accordance with the Tanakhama, it's not a continuation of Rabbi Akiva speaking. V'yaf al pi she'ein loshin, even though one cannot knead with Yayin Shemen Udvash, mekatfin bo, one can smooth out the loaf with those liquids. Ason, the Tanakhama, we see this is in a bracket simply to indicate it's not part of the source. It's the Gemara's commenting that this last phrase of Ein Loshin, but yes, Mekatfin, is according to the Tanakhama, who said not to knead the dough with these liquids. Vachachomim omrim, es sheloshin bo, Mekatfin bo. The liquid that you use for kneading, you can use for smoothing out. Ves she'ein loshin bo, a liquid that you wouldn't knead with, Ein mekatfin bo. You wouldn't smooth out the loaf either with it. V'shoven she'ein loshin eso iso b'poshrin. Everyone agrees that one should not knead dough using poshrin. That's lukewarm water. That will cause rapid fermentation. What do we see from all of this? We see that Rabbi Akiva allows the preparation of matzahs with yayin shemen u'dvash, and in the previous framed source, Rabbi Akiva was darshaning lechem oni to the exclusion of such a dough. Is that not a contradiction? The Gemara says, lo kash, you know, there is no difficulty. Ha b'yom tov rishon, ha b'yom tov sheni. A distinction is made between the first day of Pesach and the second day of Pesach. If or the last day of Pesach. The main point for us is there's a difference between the first day, more specifically the first night of Pesach, where there is a mitzvah to eat matzah min haTorah. The Torah requires us to eat matzah, and the rest of Pesach, which has a lesser level of obligation, if you will, and more likely no obligation to eat matzah whatsoever. So the Gemara goes on and says, "K'de'omar lehu Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi levenei," as Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi said to his son, "Yoyim kama loy solushu li b'chalba, mikan ve'elech lushu li b'chalba." The first day, meaning the matzahs that you prepare for me for the first night, don't knead them with milk. But beyond that, you can knead the matzahs, you can knead the flour with milk. The Gemara asks a technical question here, and as a result of this technical question, we're going to change the details of what we just said. Between the distinction between first and second day of Pesach will not be focused on using of milk, but a different liquid. The Gemara asks, how can you even suggest whatsoever using milk as the liquid for dough? V'hatanya ein lashin eso isa b'cholov. This is a halacha regarding the year round. One is not to prepare dough using milk, and the reason for that is that it's very common to eat the bread that you produced to eat it with meat. People have hot dogs on buns and hamburger rolls and salami on rye bread. Now, if you prepared all of that, all of those different kinds of breads with milk, people will forget themselves and put their meat on bread prepared with milk. So we don't want you to prepare bread whatsoever year-round using milk in the kneading. The im lush call a pasa surum ne hergel averin. If a person did knead his dough using milk as the liquid medium, the entire bread is usur because of what people are accustomed to could lead to a sin. Meat and milk. So therefore, we change the story with Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi just a little bit. Elohochi komar. Rather, it's as follows: Yumakama lo solushali bedufsha. Rabbi Shimon Levi told his son that the first day of Yom Tov, when you're preparing matzahs for the very first night, when we have a Torah obligation to eat matzah, so don't prepare it using honey. Mikan ve'elech lushu li bedufsha. Beyond that, prepare using honey. V'boy seima le'olam b'chalva. We go back to the milk preparation. Now you'll ask, but is there not a restriction in using milk? Kedoma Ravina Kain Turo Shori, as Ravina says, the expression Kain Turo means a small amount. A small amount that is such that you'll, once it's baked, you'll eat it immediately, and you'll eat it in one shot, and you won't forget yourself. You won't forget that it was made with milk and come to an Avera. Now, the literal translation of Ke'en Turah is surprisingly like a bull's eye. And we associated bull's eye with a certain type of egg, sometimes referred to as a sunny side up, if you will. But in the context of Nora, bull's eye is a reference to a small amount. So, as Ravino said elsewhere, that amount. So, Hochanami, so too in the story involving the preparation of the matzah, Ke'en Turah, a small amount, that the milk would be okay, but it would be okay only if you're preparing a small amount. Vishavin, there is agreement, She'en Loshin Eso Isa B'Poshin. Now, we should point out that the idea before of not preparing the matzahs with the yayin shemen uvash, as we said, that was a machloikes tanoim. And as far as Shitas Rabbi Akiva is concerned, where we seem to see a an inconsistency or a contradiction, so we resolve that. It depends on if it's for the first night where your matzis are for the mitzvah fulfillment, there it has to be just with water, not with yayin shemen u'dvash. But for the rest of Pesach, it would be okay. V'shavin, we said above that there is agreement, she'ein loshin es lisa b'poshin, that one is not to knead the dough using lukewarm water. The topic heading that we have included on the side reads, number one, ein loshin isa l'matzos b'mayim poshin, one does not knead the dough for matzah preparation with lukewarm water. Number two, hevdei l'mbein menochos l'chulin, the inyan zehirus michometz. The Gemara will discuss the differences between mincha, which is a meal offering in the Beis HaMikdash, which also must be maintained as matzah, and as opposed to chometz. With regard to the preparation of menachos, one had to be diligent and make sure that the dough that was used in preparing the meal offerings, which were essentially baked goods, they should not be allowed to ferment. They should be maintained as matzahs. So we will see, though, some distinctions in halacha between mincha preparation, which took place in the Beis HaMikdash, and home matzah preparation for Pesach. So now we take a look at the Gemara. After seeing the source that said one does not make matzahs using lukewarm water, the Gemara asks, "My shnami menachos? What's the difference between matzah for Pesach and menachos, meal offerings, which also had to be matzah? Disnan kol haMenachos niloishes bepoishrin u'mishamro shelo yachmitzu. All menachos are kneaded with lukewarm water, and they were careful that it should not ferment and become chometz." The Gemara explains. This is an answer. It sounds like a type of question, maybe, but it's an answer. It says, "Im omru bezrizin, yomru b'she'ein's reason." If we see an allowance for mincha preparation using the lukewarm water, that's because it was prepared by diligent ones. Zrizin is a reference to diligence, and for our purposes, it will refer to Kohanim. Kohanim are Zrizin Haim. The Kohanim, the priests that worked in the Beis HaMikdash where Menachos were prepared, so they were very diligent. So when you're dealing with people that are very diligent, so they will make sure it does not ferment. But the fact that we allow mincha preparation with poshen is not going to be grounds for allowing home matzah preparation with poshrim. The Gemara continues, "Ihachi, if you're talking about zrizin, milsas nami losis, so allow the lasisa process." Lasisa is soaking of grains to make them, we'll say easier, make it easier to remove the shell or the skin that contains the wheat, the kernel of grain that's going to be used for flour making. So lasisa has to do with soaking the grains in water. So then if mincha preparation is done by zrizin, so allow the lasisa process also. Aloma Omar Rabbi Zerum Rabbi Bar Yirmiyo Amar Shmuel. So why is it that Shmuel teaches chitin shel menachos ein loisisin oisa? Now you see with our markings we've done different forms of emphasis. We dashed underline menachos because that's the topic we're dealing with right now, where we seem to allow for leniency because of zrizin, and yet we say in the negative, ein loisisin, you're not allowed to soak the grains. So the Gemara answers, lisha bezrizin isa. Now, maybe we should point out that during the lasisa process, if you were to soak the grains, so there is the fear that there will be fermentation. So we see that we are restrictive with regard to fermentation possibilities with regard to menachos, and yet we allow the kneading of the dough using poshrin because we were dealing with reason. So how do we reconcile all of this? The Gemara answers, Lisha bizrizin isa lesisa leso bizrizin. The lisha, the kneading state, when the kneading process took place, that took place under the supervision of the zrizin, of the diligent ones. Lesisa was done earlier. It's obviously when the grains are still in their grain state, and that was done outside the Beis Hamikdash, where people, where you didn't have the element of diligence. The Gemara asks, "Velisha mi iso bizrizin?" Now, before we mentioned in passing that the concept of zrizin of diligency is associated with the Kohanim. The Gemara is asking, how can you say that lisha, the kneading of the dough, is bizrizin, assuming that zrizin means Kohanim, when that's not so? Velisha mi iso bizrizin? Was the lisha, the kneading process, done through the Kohanim, who are zrizin? Boksiv. The Pasuk says, with regard to mincha preparation, vayitzok oleh shemen, and we learn from this pasuk, mikmitza v'elich mitzvas kuhuna. The kohen enters the picture of menachos after the mincha has already been prepared, after the lisha has already been done. He enters the picture when the kohen takes the handful. The kmitza is the handful of the baked mincha, which is, after it's baked, it's subsequently broken down into small pieces, and then the kohen takes a handful from the bowl containing the small pieces of baked mincha. So the kohen enters the picture quite a bit later in the mincha preparation process. So as the Gemara says, mikmitza v'elich mitzvas kuhuna, from kmitza, from taking of the handful and onwards, there is the obligation of Kohanim to be involved. Limeid al yitzika blila shekshera b'chol adam. This teaches us that the yitzika, that has to do with the pouring of oil, and blila is the kneading, is kosher. It can be done by anybody. So the question is, the Kohen, or the who is associated with zrizin, enters the picture only later in the mincha process. So how were we justifying the kneading of the mincha with poshrin because of zrizin? The Gemara answers, lisha nehi de bizrizin lesa, granted that the lisha, the kneading of the dough in the mincha preparation, is not done by the actual zrizin, by the kohanim themselves. However, b'mokim zrizin isa, but in the vicinity of the zrizin, of the diligent ones, the lisha took place. The amar blila kshera bazar. The blila, the kneading of the mincha, is acceptable to be done by a non kohen. A zar is a non kohen. Chutz lechoymas azar psula, but outside the walls enclosing the courtyard, it would be unfit. It would be unacceptable. So where did the kneading take place? It took place in the Beis Hamikdash. There were Kohanim there at all times who would notice if something was left alone to ferment. Lafuke lesisa, to the exclusion of the lesisa process, which we described a little bit, of the soaking of the grains, the eino bizrizin velo b'mokum zrizin. Not only does it not involve Kohanim, but it isn't even done in the vicinity of the Kohanim. Hence the difference between Belila, or the lisha, the mixing together of the dough, versus the lesisa, which involved the soaking of the grains. Umay shno mi minchas haomer, what is different between other menachos and the mincha offering, the minchas haomer offering? Desanya minchas haomer loisisin oisa v'tsovin oisa. Here you have an example of a mincha. It's the minchas haomer. This was a grain offering, a meal offering on the second day of Pesach. that also had to be done in non-chometz circumstances. You have to maintain it as being unleavened. And what do we see? We see they did do lasisa, but how can that be? Is it not so that the lasisa could lead to fermentation? The Gemara answers, tzibor shiny. Let's first read the source. We skipped a couple words, but the source had said, in the question, says, what's the difference between other minochas where we don't allow lasisa, and the Minchas Omer, where the source says, Minchas Omer loisisin oisa, v'tsovernosa. Tsovernosa has to do with piling it up so as to allow the water to be released from it. But for our purposes, the Minchas Omer had lasisa done. The other menachas, we said, we did not allow lasisa. Now, if you explain the other menachas as being prohibited in the lasisa, and based on the fact that it was done outside the Beis HaMikdash, so what's the story with the Minchas Omer that all of a sudden we allow lasisa? The Gemara answers, tzibor shiny. Now, there are a couple girsos on this, but we're going to take the simple approach. The first approach that Rashi takes is that the Minchas Omer was a public offering. It was an offering for all of Klal Yisrael. It wasn't a private mincha that the owner would have to tend to it and care for it, but rather the Minchas Omer was brought under the supervision of the courts, being that it was a public meal offering. And since it was done by the courts and overseen by the courts, even though lasisa was not done in the Beis HaMikdash, the courts, though, were zrizin as well. So they would see to it that the grains would not ferment. Tanu Rabbanan. We have another Tanaic source, and you'll notice how this source continues till the Gemara on Omid Beis, the second line from the top. On the side, we have our topic heading, Ein Yoitzin Achilas Matzah B'Achilas Bikurim. Before, we had a discussion concerning matzahs made of Meiser Sheni, and here we have reference to matzahs made of Bikurim. Now, Bikurim is a requirement in the Torah of bringing it's called the first fruits. It's the first of the seven varieties of growth that the land of Israel was blessed with. Now, included in those seven varieties happens to be wheat and barley, chito sora. So chito sora, wheat and barley, is under the bikurim obligation. The bikurim, the first fruits, the first ones to ripen, were then given to the kohanim, and the kohanim would eat them in Yerushalayim. That's the din regarding bikurim. So now the Gemara deals with this. Tonu Rabbanan, Yochol Yoitzei Adam Yedei Choyvasa BeBikurim. Could a person fulfill his matzah requirement? And we can say a person is a reference to a kohen. A non-kohen is not allowed to eat bikurim. So can a kohen fulfill his matzah requirement using bikurim? Talmud Lomar, b'chol moishvoisechem tochlu matzois. That's the pasuk with regard to matzah consumption. The mitzvah of matzah was b'chol moishvoisechem, wherever you dwell. Matzah necheles b'chol moishvoisechem. Matzah that one could eat anywhere is suitable to fulfill the mitzvah of matzah. Yotzu bikurim sheinecholim b'chol moishvoisechem el b'yushalayim. Divrei Rabbi Yossi Haglili. To the exclusion of bikurim, which you cannot eat wherever you live. You are limited to Yerushalayim. Therefore, the bikurim doesn't conform to the Torah's matzah expectation of b'chol moshvoseichem. Rabbi Akiva Omer, matzah umoror. He looks at the fact that the Torah compares matzah to moror. The pasuk says, al matzus umorim tochluhu. Ma moror she'eno bikurim, just like moror, we mentioned that bikurim comes from one of the seven varieties of fruits and vegetation that the land of Israel was blessed with, and of all seven varieties, you don't have any one of them through which you could fulfill the mitzvah of moror, sometimes translated as bitter herbs, on Pesach. So just like moror is clearly she'eno bikurim, no one of the fruits of bikurim contains moror. Af matzah she'eno bikurim. So too, matzah, even though chit and sor are part of bikurim, but since matzah is compared to moror, so too matzah cannot come from bikurim. Ima moror she'en b'mino bikurim. If you're comparing the matzah to moror, so just like by moror, there's no one of the bikurim fruits that could be moror. Af matzah she'en b'mino bikurim. So too matzah. The matzah that you are to use would be a matzah made from something that would not be suitable for bikurim, that's not obligated bikurim. Once again, just like moror is something that's not associated with bikurim, so too the matzah that we are going to use on Pesach, it would stand to reason, would be matzah made from something that would not be bikurim. Oitzi chitin u'sa'orin she'esh b'minon bikurim. Should I therefore reject matzahs made from wheat or barley because they are obligated in bikurim? So that chit and sora, being that they're obligated in bikurim, does not resemble moror, that is not obligated in bikurim. So could that possibly be? Talmud lomar matzos matzos ribo. The Torah uses the word matzah on numerous occasions, that is there to include chita and seora as the material, as the ingredients for matzahs. The Gemara asks, here we're at the second line from the top of Omid Beis, e matzos matzos riva. Well, if the repetition of the word matzah in the Torah is inclusionary, and through which we included chito sora, so afilu bikurim nami. So why not say that you can use bikurim also for matzah making? The Gemara answers, Hodar bei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva retracted from his drusha of the hekesh between matzah and moror, and as a result of his retraction from that hekesh, he eventually, we'll see in the next source, he learns the din of matzah from the pasuk of mibechol bechol moshvel sechem, matzah that you can eat wherever you are, and that will exclude bikurim, but not the hekesh between matzah and moror. So as a result of this retraction, therefore the discussion we just saw involving the hekesh and then the matzos matzos riba to include chitan sora becomes unnecessary. So the Gemara presents this as a long answer. Hodar bei Rabbi Akiva. Rabbi Akiva retracts from the hekesh between matzah and moror and darshins the posuk of Bechol Moshvo Sechem, Tochlu Matzis. Tesanya, Yochol Yetze Odom Yedei Choyvosu Bebikurim. Could a person fulfill his matzah requirement by eating matzahs that were made from Bikurim? Talmud Lomar, Bechol Moshvo Sechem, Tochlu Matzis. Matzah Hanecheles Bechol Moshavos. What kind of matzah is suitable? Matzah that you could eat wherever you live. yatsu bikurim, to the exclusion of bikurim she'enon necholin b'chol moshavos. They're not eaten just anywhere in any dwelling, elo b'yushalayim, except in Jerusalem. Yochol shani motzi af meiser sheni, should I exclude meiser sheni as well? Now, the reason for even thinking that is, well, once you tell me b'chol moshavos eichem, meiser sheni too is something that's restricted to Yerushalayim. So, should I exclude meiser sheni from fulfilling matzis? In other words, if a person made matzis using meiser sheni grains, would he not fulfill his mitzvah? Talmud Lomar, matzos riba. The repetition of the word matzah in the Torah comes to include meiser sheni. Uma rois l'rabos meiser sheni l'hotzi bikurim. What is it that forced you, that made you decide that meiser sheni is acceptable and bikurim not? Answer: Marbani meiser sheni sheyesh lo heter b'chol moshavos k'der Rebbe Elazar. I will include meiser sheni as something that has a potential for being eaten all over, based on Rebbe Elazar's teaching, and we'll see what that's a reference to in a minute. But the meiser sheni has a potential connection to all areas. Umotzi ani bikurim shein lohen heter b'chol moshavos, to the exclusion of bikurim that never has any connection to places outside Yerushalayim. What do we mean by Rebbe Elazar's drasha? D'yomer Rebbe Elazar, minayin l'meiser sheni shenitma shepoiden oisoy afiv Yerushalayim. From where do we know that meiser sheni that happened to have become defiled can be redeemed even if it's in Yerushalayim? Generally speaking, we understand that redemption of meiser sheni is to take place before you get to Yerushalayim. Before you bring your fruits to Yerushalayim, there you redeem them. Once they're brought into Yerushalayim, there's a concept of mechitzas koltos. The walls trap or entrap the meiser sheni, meaning the walls, once the meiser sheni enters Yerushalayim, you can no longer redeem them, transfer their sanctity onto cash. However, what if the meiser sheni became tomei, and you happen to be in Yerushalayim? So Rebbe Elazar says that's an exception, and you could redeem meiser sheni even if it came into Yerushalayim. If you're talking about meiser sheni became tamei, from where do we know that? Talmud Lomar ki lo suchal seiso v'ein seis elachi. The pasuk that talks about redemption says ki lo suchal seiso, and the word seiso in this context is taken to mean eating. V'ein seis elachi. So that when you read the pasuk that speaks about when can you redeem, well, ki lo tuchal seiso, when you cannot eat it, and if it became tomei, so you can't eat it. So what do you do? Redeem it. Take those fruits which were meiser sheni, and have their sanctity transferred to money, and then those fruits, now that they're redeemed, you can take them and eat them wherever. Shenemar, and how do I know that se'es means achila? Vayisa masos me'es ponov. In the story involving the sons of Yankiv and their trip to Mitzrayim, so it says, and they carried packages of food. So masos is associated with food, with achila. Man shamis lay. Now we have to not lose sight of the forest for the trees. We brought this entire Tanaic source in to demonstrate that Rabbi Akiva was chozer, retracted his drusha of matzah sumrorim, and rather opted for learning the din of matzah from b'chol moshvo seichem. In this source, there was no name, no author reported in the source. So who is the author of this source? Man shamislei d'omar b'meiser sheni nafik bay. Who is the Tana that says that one can fulfill matzah by using meiser sheni? That in fact was a Tanaic controversy that we saw in Omid Aleph. Well, who says you can be yotze with meiser sheni as this source indicates? Rabbi Akiva. He says you can use Meiser Sheni. V'komimai lehu lebikurim, and Rabbi Akiva is excluding Bikurim mibachol moshvasechem using that pasuk. Shma mino hodarbe, this shows us he retracted. The Gemara now turns its attention back to Rabbi Yossi HaGlili. He was seen on the lower part of Omid Aleph. You'll notice we have an arrow to the right-hand side of the Gemara text, indicating to look back on Omid Aleph. And if you look on back to Omid Aleph on the lower part of the page, you'll see a reference to Rabbi Yossi HaGlili, who mentioned that Bikurim cannot be used for matzis. And there he learned it from B'chol Moshvo Sechem. The Gemara asks, Rabbi Yossi HaGlili Teipuk Le Milechem Oini. Why doesn't Rabbi Yossi HaGlili exclude matzis from the expression Lechem Oini, Mi Shenechal Ba'oini, something that one could eat when he is an onain? Yotza Ze She'ein Nechal Ela B'simcha, to the exclusion of Bikurim, that we're assuming must be eaten only when in a state of joy, as opposed to onain. The Gemara answers, you know why you can't exclude Bikurim based on Lechem Oni? Because Sovar Lei, Rabbi Yossi HaGlili holds Rabbi Shimon. He holds like Shitas Rabbi Shimon, that we'll see in a minute, allows an onain to eat Bikurim. Desanya, Bikurim asum l'onein, Rabbi Shimon matir. Now we've dashed, underlined the key words for you to focus on, Bikurim and the word matir. And we underline Rabbi Shimon, so you see that Rabbi Shimon is matir and onein to eat Bikurim. Therefore, if you want to say that matzah fulfillment cannot be through Bikurim, you cannot cite Lechem Oni. You'd have to cite B'chol Moshvei Sechem, thereby excluding Bikurim, which cannot be eaten B'chol Moshvei Sechem. My time at the Rabbonan. So why is it the Rabbonan Aser, they prohibit Bikurim to an Onein? Dichtiv, the Pasuk says, Lo Sucha Lechol B'shorecha, and it goes on to list off a number of items in that posuk that you cannot eat b'shorecha. V'yomamar, trumas yodecha, which is an expression found in those psukim, says elu bikurim. And in the list of items there's a reference to meiser sheni as well. The iskish bikurim lemeiser. The Torah in that posuk in Dvarim Perek Yud Beis cites Meiser Sheni and Trumas Yodecha indicating Bikurim, hence they are compared to one another. Ma Meiser Oser Lo'oinein, just like Meiser is Oser to an Onein, as the Pasuk says with regard to Meiser, it says Lo Ochalti Ba'oini Mimenu, Af Bikurim Oser Lo'oinein, by virtue of this Hekish, so Bikurim are also Oser to the Onein. The Rabbi Shimon, what does he do with the Hekish? How is it that Rabbi Shimon allows the Onein to eat Bikurim? So the Gemara answers, Truma Karinu Rachmana. The Torah chooses the word Truma, it says Trumas Yodecha, as a reference to Bikurim. Why does the Torah call Bikurim using the word Truma? Kitruma, comparing it to the Truma tithe. Ma truma muteres lo inein af bikurim mutar lo inein, just like truma is something that an onein, a kohen who's an onein, is allowed to eat, so to bikurim, which a kohen eats, is permitted to the onein. The Rabbi Shimon, who is matir bikurim to an onein, the Gemara asks, for Rabbi Shimon, nihi de hekish lesley, granted, he doesn't accept the hekish between Meiser Sheni and Bikurim. Simcha miha michtav ksiva behu. The term simcha appears with regard to Bikurim, dechtiv v'samachta b'chol hatoiv. Here's a pasuk referring to Bikurim, and it says v'samachta, should that not exclude the onein? The Gemara answers, no, it doesn't exclude the onen. Hahu, the purpose of a samachta, and that pasuk is lizman simcho dosa. It delineates the time of year for bringing bikurim. The snan, and what's the time of year where there is simcha? So it says in the following source, me atzeres v'alachag mevi v'kore, from atzeres, which is Shavuos. This is the holiday where the people begin harvesting different items. So between Shavuos and Chag is Sukkis. This is a time that people are happy because they see the results of their hard work, their agricultural labor. So they see the crops are growing and they're involved with harvesting them. They are happy. Therefore, during that time period, one brings the Bikurim to the Beis HaMikdash, where they're then presented to the Kohen, of course. They bring it. V'kore is a reference to reading a passage from the Torah that concerns the Bikurim. It's called Mikra Bikurim or Parshas Bikurim. That Parsha is read. Mehachag v'ad Chanukah, from Sukkis until Chanukah, mevi v'eino kore. A person brings Bikurim, but at that point he doesn't read the Parsha anymore. Rashi adds, Mehachag v'ad Chanukah, eino zman simcha, it's not the time of joy, v'eino kore, and doesn't read. U'mechanukah v'eilech eino zman havo, but after Chanukah, it's not even the time for bringing whatsoever. The sign of the Sifri, the Pasuk says, and this is quoted from the Sifri, which is the Medrash on Sefer Bamidvar Dvorim. It says, Asher tovi me'artzecha, and we learn, Kol zman shemitzuyen al pnei artzecha, shelo kolu l'chaya min asode. When does one bring bikurim? When the plants, when the vegetation is available to the animals living in the wild. But after Chanukah, the fruits are no longer out there in the wilds for the animals. Therefore, it's not the time for even bringing whatsoever. We continue with a new line of thought, and on the side we have a topic heading, the Nosei. Once again, we feature Lechem Oini, and here, Prat L'cholot V'ashisha. This will exclude different types of baked goods to serve as matzah. The Gemara, Tanu Rabbanan, the slash mark indicates, as we said, a new trend of thought. Lechem Oini. The Torah's use of the word, of the expression lechem oni, in reference to matzis, prat lecholut ulashisha. Rashi says, cholut, he uses a French word, but for our purposes, it's v'chashivusu, it's a method of preparation that's associated with important items. And lechem oni indicating something of an impoverished nature. So you're not going to bring cholut, and nor will you bring ashisha. Rashi says, gluska gdol, it's a large loaf. Yochol lo yetz odom yidei chavosu ela bepas hadra. Does this mean then that a person will fulfill his matzah obligation only if he uses pas hadra? Pas hadra, Rashi says, shenital kol hadara, some bread made from flour that's lost all of its glory. Dainu pas kevar. Pas kevar is bread made from flour that is of a very poor quality. So because you're darshaning lechem oni, excluding these fine cakes, so does that mean that I'm supposed to use this poor quality flour and only that? Talmud lomer matzas riba. The word matzah appears numerous times in the Torah, coming to include even better quality flour. V'afilu kematzos shel Shlomo, even matzahs made like those that King Solomon made. Then Rashi says, shel Shlomo shoyim meunog, he was a very meunog person. Meunog is an expression that describes someone who desires fine quality goods. So Rashi adds, klomar soilus nikiya, very clean flour, clean high quality flour. Well, so we're saying that as a result of matzos rebaw, which is inclusionary, we're including even high quality flour as suitable for making matzos. Imkein matamid lomar lechemoni. So what does lechemoni accomplish in terms of halacha? Prat lecholut ulashisha. It comes to exclude those kinds of cakes or loaves. Umay mashma the high ashisha lishna the chashivusa. From where do we know that ashisha is associated with something of great importance, which the term lechem only comes to exclude? Dichtiv, the pasuk says, "Vayechalek l'chol ha'om l'chol hamon Yisrael l'meish vad isha l'ish chalas lechem achas ve'ashpor echad v'ashisha achas." This pasuk is found in the context of a great festivity conducted by David HaMelech upon the return of the Oron from its captivity amongst the Plishtim. A great feast was made, and we see that the entire population received these different food items, and one of the items that's mentioned is the Ashisha. The Omar Rav Chonon Bar Abba, Ashbar, which is mentioned in the pasuk, equals echod mishisha bepar. It's one sixth of a cow. You can imagine that's what everyone received, a sixth of a cow. It's a vast amount of meat. Ashisha equals echod mishisha beefa. Efa is a measure. It's one sixth of an efa, indicating, for our purposes, a rather large loaf. So that this is something of chashiva, something of significance, and the Torah doesn't want me to use that when it comes to the mitzvah of matzah, which is described as lechem oini, the bread of affliction or the bread of the impoverished. Upligo de Shmuel, this explanation that's given by Rav Chonon Bar Abba is at odds or differs from that of Shmuel. D'yomar Shmuel, the Amora Shmuel says, Ashisha Garva the Chamra. The Ashisha is a reference to a Rashi says, Garva the Chamra, Efa Shel Yayin. It's a measure of wine, Dechtiv, V'avai Ashishe Anovim. So you see the word Ashishe associated with Anovim grapes, which is the source of wine. Tana Rabbanan. A new Tanaic source, also with regard to matzah preparation. Ein oifen pas ovo bepesach, divrei beis shamai. Now, we're deliberately not going to translate the expression ovo. The reason for that is because there are a couple of explanations. The literal translation of pas ovo would be a thick loaf. So Beis Shammai says one does not bake a pas ovo on Pesach. U Beis Hillel matirin. Beis Hillel says it's okay. We're at the top of Daf Lamed Zayin Mar Aleph. The kama pas ovo. Well, and how much is that? When you say, if assuming that it means a thick loaf, what is that amount? Omer Avuna tefach. Shekin matzinu belechem aponim tefach. The Rashi at the top explains v'kamo pas ova tefach v'afilu hachi shoru beisilo afol tfei mitefach lo. A tefach is allowed. It seems then that the machlokis beisilol beishamai, courtesy of Rashi, is really at a very specific exact point. Beishamai says you cannot make pas ova. Beis Hillel says you can, and so what is it that they are arguing about? About one tefach. You see, less than that, it would seem that Beis Shammai would say you can make. More than that, even Beis Hillel says, cannot make. So the point of controversy seems to focus on one tefach, a loaf of bread that's kept from fermentation that has a thickness of a tefach. And where does that shiur come from? So Rashi explains that which Rav Huna said, Shekem otzinu b'lechem aponim. Lechem aponim were 12 loaves. In English, they're translated as the show breads that were kept in the heichal from week to week, changed every week. And those loaves had to be matzah, meaning they have to be unleavened. And how thick were the lechem aponim? So Rashi explains that which Rav Huna said, Shekem otzinu b'lechem aponim shu osur lovo chomes. It's forbidden for them to become leavened. Kidamrino b'menachas, as the Gemara says in Maseches Menachas. So we know that the dimensions of the lechem aponim included the fact that they had a thickness of a tefach. And they also had to be kept from fermenting. The marking, the crown shape that you see, is featured on the side under the Mivneh. Note, Shnei Pirushim Lebitui Pasova. So we're going to encounter two explanations as to what Pasova means. At this point, we start a long rejection. Maskif law Rav Yosef. Rav Yosef, you will see, rejects the explanation of Passover being a tefach based on that's what you found by the lechem aponim. Rav Yosef says, how can you use the lechem aponim as the basis for halachas concerning the making of matzahs? So Rav Yosef says, im omru bizrizin, if there was an allowance to make a relatively thick type of matzah loaf, because you were in the Beis HaMikdash where Kehanim were present, so they were Zrizin. We said this much earlier in today's shiur, Kehanim Zrizinheim. So they could be trusted to oversee it from fermenting. Are you going to say the same thing, Yomru B'Shein on Zrizin? Would you say the same thing in everyone's home, that we could trust them to make sure that a tefach thick matzah does not ferment? And we go on with a total of five clashes, five distinctions between that which you find by the making of the lechem aponim, as opposed to that which is present in everyone's house when it comes to matzah making. So far we saw this distinction. Lechem aponim was done bizrizin. Therefore, you can allow something a tefach thick. That doesn't mean I would allow that in everyone's home. Imomru b'pasa meila, yomru b'pasheina meila. If you'll say that we'll allow a tefach, that's because the lechem aponim was made from dough that was very thoroughly kneaded. And Rashi says, sheino emeres lachmitz. When you have a very thorough kneading done to the dough, that prevents it, that slows the fermentation. So would you say the same thing with regard to pas she'eino amela? Once again, in the Beis HaMikdash, the Gemara in Menachos describes how they made the lechem aponim dough, and it was kneaded very thoroughly. Imamru be'etzim yuveshim, if you'll say the rolal a tefach, that's because the wood that was used for the baking of it was very dry wood, creating a very hot fire. Yomru be'etzim lachem, would you say the same thing when it comes to common wood fuel, which is damp? Imamru betanur cham, yomru betanur tzonein, if you'll say that will allow a tefach, that's because in the Beis HaMikdash the oven was very hot. It was constantly used for baking menachos and lachmei todah. That's not the same when it comes to personal ovens that were called tzonein, cool, but certainly they were not of the same heat intensity as you found in the Beis HaMikdash. Im omru betanu shel mateches, yomru betanu shel cheres. If you'll say that we make an allowance for a tefach thick loaf, because in the Beis HaMikdash they were using iron stoves, where the heat level apparently was much greater, as opposed to clay stoves, clay ovens that we use, that people use in their backyards, wherever they are when they're coming to make matzahs. So Rav Yosef, Bekitzer, in concise terms, Rav Yosef says you cannot base matzah preparation that people do in their homes on the standard, base it on the Lechem Aponim standard that was done in the Beis HaMikdash, for five different reasons. Omar Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba, She'ilis es Rebbe Biyichud, I asked Rebbe Biyichud. Now, Biyichud, Rashi explains, Beino Leveni, in other words, personally, between him and me, Rabbeinu de Rav Yirmiyah, Rav, Rabbeinu de Rav, Rabbeinu HaKadosh. The Rashi gives a little chain of history here. And Rav Yirmiyah bar Abba quotes Rav, who says, I asked Rebbe. So Rav learned by Rebbe, and he said, I asked him on a private basis. Umanu. Manu is when the Gemara says, I asked Rabbi, my teacher, who is that? Rabbeinu HaKadosh, Rabbi Yehuda HaNasi, who is also known as Rabbeinu HaKadosh. My Passover. So the question was posed to Rebbe, what is meant by Passover? And this expression is what we, what started off this most recent discussion, that was based on a source that was at the bottom line of Amud Aleph. So what is Passover? Pas Meruba. It means a lot, many loaves, many small loaves, not a tefach thick. They could be very thin. Va'amai koru le Passover. Why, if it's Passover means quantity, why does the term ova appear? Ova means thick. So the Gemara answers, mishum d'nefisha belisha, because there is a lot of dough, so that when it's in its dough form, all the dough is together, and it's a thick dough because of the simple quantity that's indicated when you're making a lot of small loaves or small cakes, which is of course going to be the matzah. V'iboy seima the asrei the haitano lepas meruba pas ova koru le. Another explanation of pas ova as referring to quantity is because that's the term. Ova was the term used when referring to large quantity of loaves. My taima, what is the reason for the opinion that says you cannot make pas ova? If it's because of expenditure of trouble, of troubling yourself, of going to too much bother that's not necessary. In other words, we allow on holidays people to trouble themselves for things that are necessary for the holiday. But if you're talking about making a large quantity, so maybe that involves tircha de lo tzorech. Well, if that is the problem, my iria bePesach, why does the source feature just the holiday of Pesach? After all, if you look at the original source at the bottom line of the previous Amud Beis, it said ein oifen Passover bePesach. Why does the source make reference to Pesach if it's a general holiday restriction? Afilu b'yom tov nami, even with regard to any other yom tov, one is not allowed to expend efforts that are not necessary for the holiday. So the Gemara says, "In hochinami, you are 100% correct." B'hai Tana b'yom tov shel Pesach koi. When the Tana says not to make Passover but Pesach, he simply cited Pesach because that was the holiday that was observed at the time he taught that. But Pesach isn't a limitation to Pesach, but it refers to any Yom Tov. Tanya Nami Hochi. Now we have another source that bears this explanation out. It says, Beishamayomim ein oifin pas ova b'yom tov. Well, beisil omatirin. Here you see we dash the line b'yom tov, indicating that the explanation for the first source that cited Pesach was only because Pesach was an example of a yom tov, because the Tana was speaking during the holiday of Pesach, but not to the exclusion of the other holidays, where the problem of tircha applies equally. Just let us point out, though, that the issue was a machlokis between Beis Shammai and Beis Hillel, and Beis Hillel allows it, and you'll ask, well, how can he allow extraordinary extra tircha to trouble yourself so much? So the Tosfos addresses that particular topic, and what it comes down to is that the more bread that's baked in the oven, the better it is. So the extra trouble that you're putting yourself to is actually for the benefit of the holiday itself. That would be Beis Hillel's explanation. Before we conclude, let us just remind you that we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.